Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. I'm going to read one verse this morning, text 9, from Canto 3, Chapter 7. The title of the chapter is Further Inquiries by Vidura, and text 9, Maitreya is beginning to respond to the questions just asked. So I'll read the Sanskrit. Maitreya uvacha sevyam bhagavato maya yan nayena virudyate ishvarasya vimuktasya karpanyam uta bandhanam. Two and a half page purport to this verse. Translation: Sri Maitreya said, certain conditioned souls put forward the theory that the Supreme Brahman or the Personality of Godhead is overcome by illusion or maya, and at the same time they maintain that he is unconditioned. This is against all logic. So Shankara's philosophy is not something new. That Brahman becomes covered and yet is unconditioned. The illogic of that statement is as old as the Bhagavatams. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Sometimes it appears that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is 100% spiritual, cannot be the cause of the illusory potency which covers the knowledge of the individual soul. That was one of the questions. How is it possible that something material comes from something spiritual, and the living entity, who is also spiritual, becomes covered by something material? Sometimes it appears that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is 100% spiritual, cannot be the cause of the illusory potency which covers the knowledge of the individual soul. But factually, there is no doubt that the illusory external energy is also part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. So there's the energy, the deluding potency is part and parcel. When Vyasadeva realized the personality of Godhead, he saw the Lord along with his external potency, which covers the pure knowledge of the individual living entities. That's from Canto 1, Chapter 7. Yaya samohito jiva atmanam trigunatmakam. The darshan of the realization of Vyasadeva under the instruction of Narada. He saw the Supreme Lord. He saw the potency of the Supreme Lord, the illusory potency behind him, and he saw that that illusory potency of the Supreme Lord deludes the living entity, bewilders the living entity. So it's the Lord, his potency, and the living entity, three of the five main subject matters of Bhagavad Gita, and that illusory potency bewilders the living entity under the direction of the Supreme Lord, or is taken away and doesn't delude. That's what's being said here. Why the external energy acts in this way may be considered as follows. as analyzed by the great commentators like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Srila Jiva Goswami. Although the material illusory energy is distinct from the spiritual energy, it is one of the many energies of the Lord, and thus the material modes of nature, the mode of goodness, etc., are surely qualities of the Lord. So that's important. He who has no qualities has qualities. He who has no material qualities has material qualities, or has material energy which has qualities. He personally is neutral, but his energies have qualities which are changing. The energy and the energetic personality of Godhead are not different, and although such energy is one with the Lord, he is never overpowered by it. Although the living entities are also parts and parcels of the Lord, they are overcome by the material energy. The inconceivable yogam aishwaryam of the Lord, as mentioned in Bhagavad Gita 9.5, is misunderstood by the froggish philosophers. In support of a theory that Narayana, the Lord himself, becomes Daridra Narayana, a poor man, they propose that the material energy overcomes the Supreme Lord. Srila Jiva Goswami and Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, however, offer a very nice example in explanation. They say that although the sun is all light, the clouds, darkness, and snowfall are all part and parcel of the sun. Or, without the sun, there is no possibility of the skies becoming overcast with clouds or darkness, nor can there be snowfall on the earth. Although life is sustained by the sun, life is also disturbed by darkness and snowfall produced by the sun. But it is also a fact that the sun itself is never overcome by darkness, clouds, or snowfall. The sun is far, far away from such disturbances. That's the example that he's referring to, Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Only those who, and he refers to it again several times, this comparison. Only those who have a poor fund of knowledge say, the sun is covered by a cloud or by darkness. Similarly, the Supreme Brahman or the Parabrahman, the personality of God, it is always unaffected by the influence of the material energy, although it is one of his energies. Parasya Shaktir Vividaiva Shruyate. And that's the first paragraph. The next paragraph is more than a page long. There is no reason to assert that the Supreme Brahman is overpowered by the illusory energy. The clouds, darkness, and snowfall can cover only a very insignificant portion of the sun's rays. Similarly, the modes of material nature may react upon the ray-like living entities. It is the misfortune of the living entity, certainly not without reason, that the influence of the material energy acts on his pure consciousness and eternal bliss. So that's another one of the questions that was asked and being addressed here. Text 5, we're reading 9, but going back, text 5 says, the pure soul in pure consciousness is pure consciousness and is never out of consciousness, either due to circumstances, time, situations, dreams, or other causes. How then does he become engaged in nescience? It's something like, if you have a incandescent light bulb, so there's a filament inside and it's glowing, and then you have a little glass covering the bulb itself, and if it's clear, transparent, then with the glowing filament inside radiates out, same, unchanged. But supposing you frost the covering, or you make it blue, red, green, or some other color, and then it appears to the person who's looking at from the outside that the rays of light coming from the filament are red, blue, green, frosted, or whatever, because of the covering. But inside, the filament is unchanged. In a similar way, the consciousness of the living entity is pure. Or the soul, yeah. The pure soul in pure consciousness is never out of consciousness. But then you can also describe the external circumstance. Circumstance, time, situations, dreams, other causes. So, in one sense we can say the soul becomes covered, in another sense we can say soul is not covered. Consciousness becomes distorted because of the living entity's identification with the covering. And if the identification with the covering is withdrawn, the pure consciousness of the soul is fully restored. It's the abandonment of our true consciousness, or the soul's original consciousness, that makes us think in other terms. So there's the sentence. It is the misfortune of the living entity, certainly not without reason, so there is reason, that the influence of the material energy acts on his pure consciousness, because Prabhupada was asking the question in the purport, why does the illusory energy cover the living entity? Not how, in this case, the question was why. Because the living entity's withdrawing their attention from Krishna. And so their attention goes somewhere else. The attention goes to the illusory energy of Krishna, and the illusory energy bewilders the living entity. When forgetfulness of Krishna prevails. And then the opposite. When remembrance of Krishna prevails, that action of the illusory potency is withdrawn. Unconditioned, unfettered, uncovered.
So
then, next in the purport, without making specific reference to the verse, he refers to the Vishnu Purana verse where it's described that the Supreme Lord has three principal potencies: the living entity who is conscious, the avidya karma, sangya, the illusory potency that covers the living entity, and the internal potency of the Supreme Lord. These three comprise the energies of the personality of Godhead. So, without citing the verse, here's what he says. This covering up of the pure consciousness and eternal bliss of the living entity is due to Avidyakarma Sangya, the energy which acts on the infinitesimal living entities who misuse their minute independence. That's the why. Misuse of minute independence. And the what is the Avidyakarma Sangya, the illusory potency covers. According to Vishnu Purana, Bhagavad Gita, and other Vedic literatures, the living entities are generated from the tatastha energy. Living entities are generated from the tatastha energy of the Lord. There's this, like, the origin of the jiva thing. So there's a nice statement in this purport. The living entities are generated from the tatastha energy of the Lord, and thus they are always the energy of the Lord and are not the energetic. The living entities are like the sun's rays. So now back to the metaphor. Some portion of the sun's rays may be covered by darkness, clouds, or snow. Although, as explained above, there is no qualitative difference between the sun and its rays, the sun's rays are sometimes overpowered by another energy of the sun, namely by clouds or snowfall. By the potency of the sun, there's clouds. By the potency of the sun, there's snowfall. But the sun isn't controlled or overcome. Some portion of the rays of the sun may be covered, but even those rays aren't diminished. They're just, for our appearance purposes, they appear. Similarly, although the living entities are qualitatively one with the superior energy of the Lord, they have the tendency to be overpowered by the inferior material energy. In the Vedic hymns, it is said that the living entities are like sparks of a fire. So that metaphor isn't something imaginative or novel or fiction or something. It's a Vedic statement. The living entities are compared to sparks. So, then Prabhupada unpacks that one. What are sparks? The sparks of a fire are also fire, but the burning potency of the sparks is different from that of the original fire. When the sparks fly out of the touch of the original fire, they come under the influence of the non-fiery atmosphere, thus they maintain the potency to be again one with the fire as sparks, but not as the original fire. The sparks can everlastingly remain within the original fire and as its parts and parcels, but the moment the sparks become separated from the original fire, their misfortunes and miseries begin. Because their fiery capacity is diminished. There's limitations to that metaphor because the spark loses its glowing because of distance from the fire. The living entity, in contrast, is pure consciousness that's never by circumstances diminished. It's just covered. Continuing the second paragraph, the clear conclusion is that the Supreme Lord, who is the original fire, is never overpowered, but the infinitesimal sparks of the fire can become overpowered by the illusory effect of Maya. It is a most ludicrous argument to say that the Supreme Lord is overpowered by his own material energy. The Lord is the master of the material energy, and the living entities are in the conditioned state controlled by the material energy. That is the version of Bhagavad Gita. The froggish philosophers who put forward the argument that the Supreme Lord is overpowered by the material mode of goodness, Shankara's philosophy, are themselves illusioned by the same material energy, although they think of themselves as liberated souls. They support their arguments by a false and laborious jugglery of words, which is a gift of the same illusory energy of the Lord. But the froggish philosophers, I guess it makes you don't want to feel like you want to be a philosopher after reading this purport. But the poor, froggish philosophers, due to a false sense of knowledge, cannot understand the situation. One more half-page paragraph. In the sixth canto, ninth chapter, 34th verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated, the long Sanskrit, it's in prose, thus the demigods prayed to the Supreme Lord that, although his activities are very difficult to understand, they can still be understood to some extent by those who sincerely engage in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. The demigods admitted that although the Lord is apart from the material influence or creation, he nevertheless creates, maintains, and annihilates the complete cosmic manifestation by the agency of themselves, the demigods. So, going back to the previous chapter was a question and answer about the Supreme Lord and his creative potency, how he executes or exercises that potency for the purpose of creation. Very important topic, because we're in this situation, we're in the material created realm. And what's our relationship with the Creator? Because he doesn't appear to be visible, at least to material vision. He's not visible. So how are we to discern him? And how are we to understand the relationship between him and the creation that we can discern? So it's an important question. Discussed in Canto 2, at length it's discussed here in Canto 3, again from a different vantage point. That's discussed in the previous chapter. So in this chapter, the beginning portion, wait a minute, there's some further questions. Wait a minute, how does this work? Illusory potency coming from one who is all spiritual and unchanging, something that's always changing coming from one who is all unchanging, a living entity who is also in pure consciousness and never out of pure consciousness becomes deluded. How does that happen? He's accompanied by the Supreme Lord, who's the protector of his dear devotee, and he still becomes apparently unprotected and bewildered and suffers. So how does all this work? So very good questions, and it opens the door for these fundamental understandings of sambandha, the relationship between the Lord, his potency, and the living entity. So these metaphors are very appropriate. Without the sun, we don't have life as we know it, and we also don't have the byproducts of the sun. Sun in contact with water sun element, water element makes clouds. And then sometimes the clouds come down as rain or snowfall, depending on the temperature, which is depending upon the sun. And the absence of that sunlight, because the sun is shining on some object and there's a shadow cast, so that darkness is also related to the sun. So these material conditions, the conditioning of the living entity, is a product of the Supreme Lord and his potencies, much like clouds. Nice example. Clouds, snow, darkness are byproducts of the sun. Without them, without the sun, you don't have them. So without Krishna, we don't have the conditioning of a living entity. We don't have living entities either. But the conditioning of those living entities, although qualitatively one with the Supreme Lord, how they regard the Supreme Lord determines what the external effects are going to be. And that good fortune, misfortune, is created by the living entity specific to their regard for the Supreme Lord. Sadasat Yoni Janmasu. Important verse in the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. The living entity brings about his own good fortune, misfortune, based upon his regard for the Supreme Lord. We can't blame our misfortune on the Supreme Lord. Oh, why is God doing this to me? Back to the metaphor, like the spark in the vicinity of the fire, the spark is fire. Giving heat and light and can ignite other fires. Take the spark from some distance from the fire, and its fiery potency is reduced, depending upon what it comes in contact with. It can be completely extinguished, falling on water, or falling on land, or falling on dry leaves. So that's the modes of nature. The metaphor is, in the quality of goodness, the living entity can manifest his, the potential is there to manifest his original Krishna consciousness. Like the spark falling on dry leaves, it can ignite another fire. The spark that falls on land, its glowing continues for some time, but after some time the glowing goes out because it's lost contact with the fire. And the spark lands on water and instantly it's extinguished. In contact with the mode of ignorance, our dormant or natural Krishna consciousness becomes so covered it does not manifest. But take that same spark and bring it back into the fire. The fiery nature, the glowing and original quality of the spark is fully restored. So we have two metaphors in the purport introduced by Prabhupada, this spark metaphor and clouds, snow, and darkness metaphor, to help understand something that, as stated in the purport, is otherwise going to be just a bewilderment. It's such an important subject that it's right there in the meditation of Vyas, or say it the other way around, that meditation of Vyas, that which he realized is at the essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Srimad Bhagavatam is simply expanding in various ways, just like right here, is expanding in various ways that very fundamental realization of Vyas. What's God, what's the living entity, what's the external energy, and his various other potencies. And how does this work? How does the living entity become covered? How does the living entity become uncovered? What's the process of restoring original consciousness? How does it work? Just in, very beautiful, just in three verses, the whole thing is there. His realization. And the rest of the Bhagavatam is expanding that understanding. But this gives us the scriptural foundation or the philosophical basis for engaging ourselves properly in devotional service. Then comes the engaging ourselves, the practical application part. And we should be mindful of what the teaching of the Bhagavatam is while we engage in our devotional service so that we can realize that subject matter beyond the theoretical construct of the thing, and then upon circumstance engage properly, and if circumstance is difficult or changes, then we may not find ourselves engaged in devotional service anymore, but illusory activity. So best to engage in the proper activity, at the same time being mindful of what the teaching is, and in that way gradually realize that you become fixed in that teaching. Just like the end of this purport is where the demigods are offering prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they're also in a state where they're bewildered because of some circumstance in their course of their service, they're bewildered. But they're declaring their dependency upon the Supreme Lord, because he who, by whose energy they're bewildered, is the same one that he by whose potency they're engaged in devotional service. So their effort is to fix their consciousness upon the Supreme Lord so they can do their service. They can become free from bewilderment. He's the source of those apparently two extremes or opposites, being bewildered and being properly situated in service. And the variable is this, like the discussion yesterday evening, proportionate to one's submission and surrender to the Supreme Lord, delusion is taken away. Or as much as you look directly at the light, or in the direction of the light, darkness is dispelled. And then the converse is also true. Turn your attention away to the light, there's darkness. You want to remove darkness, turn to the light. Tamasima jyotir kama. One last thing is, Prabhupada makes reference to the Yogam Aishvaryam verse of chapter 9, text number 5 of Bhagavad Gita, where the basis, that's the basis of these seeming contradictions, where the Lord is unchangeable, but he creates that which is always changeable. The Lord, who is all spiritual, has potencies which create the material realm. The living entity, which is also spiritual like the Lord, becomes covered. It's the manipulation or the mystical transformation of the Lord's energies, and that it's necessary to get it straight, to understand the energies in relation to the Lord, and he can move those energies as he likes. And at the same time, he's not moved by them, he's not covered by them or conditioned by them or influenced by them in any way whatsoever. And that's the verse. I'll just read the verse again. Maitreya is dismissing this erroneous idea that Brahman becomes covered by illusion, mind-body philosophy. Certain conditioned souls, Maitreya said, put forward the theory that the Supreme Brahman, or the Personality of Godhead, is overcome by illusion or Maya. And at the same time, they maintain that he is unconditioned. This is against all logic. Okay, so any discussion or questions?
I'm curious to know why Krishna is remains neutral or detached when living entities when living entities like struggling modes and like identifying, you know, when we are right in the middle of, you know, fully covered and struggling with the modes, like what I'm hearing, Krishna is remaining neutral and detached.
Well, it doesn't say specifically that he's detached, but he is detached.
Yeah.
It doesn't say that here,
yeah.
But he's so a phrase that I use is detached caring. So it's not that he cares in the sense that they're his part and parcel living entities. Who he has unlimited divine love for. At the same time, they have free will and they may use it however to within the limited range that you can use free will, they can use as they have the capacity. So he doesn't want them to misuse their free will. He cares. But they may misuse their free will. So if there's no question of free will, if he, you know, interferes with their free will, then it's not free will, because his will is supreme. So in that sense, detached. He doesn't interfere with their exercise of free will. He gives teachings. He gives reminders. He gives so many things so that they properly use their free will. But it's, if by stubborn obstinacy, if someone insists on misusing their free will, he doesn't interfere. And that's the detachment. It's not, he doesn't care. He doesn't interfere. He attracts them. He sends teachings. He sends teachers. He sends messages. He's, you know, from within the heart. He says, oh, you know, left, right, and sideways, so many things. To prompt the proper use of free will, but they may not respond. That, the detachment, he doesn't interfere. But he cares very deeply. Yeah.
So it appears that the living entity has to make a lot of effort, like when a living entity is in a covered state, you know, because what I'm hearing is one of the main concepts that it's misuse of my free will. So it's the living entity who has to desire, have to have that strong desire to connect back. So for me, it looks like there's a lot of effort on the living entity has to make, where Krishna is remaining. That's the struggle I'm having, to see that there is a lot of effort, but Krishna's remaining, because even yesterday's class you're talking about Bharat Maharaj, so it's very scary to hear how, you know, such an elevated devotee is. Although he, you know, he continued his Krishna consciousness next life.
Well, let's take, you know, Bharat Maharaj or King Indradumna, who became an elephant. The Lord is drawing, you know, it looks like, oh, he became a deer. Or, oh, he became an elephant. But it was a circumstance where very quickly he came to the perfectional stage of life. As opposed to who knows what might have happened otherwise. Because that's what happened. In his next life, he became perfected soul. So, but specific to your question, you know, the effort that one has to make, we'll go to this extreme and say the good news is when we return to the spiritual world, it's squeaky clean. There's not going to be any of this, like, turmoil. And we'll be in the association of those persons who have no baggage. But we're paying the price for the misuse of our free will. And that's the struggle is just to properly use our free will, that's all. You know, really, that's the healthy state, proper use of free will. That's the healthy state. So what's the struggle? It's, you know, the tendency to do otherwise. That's the struggle. And you know, it's you know, we just take responsibility for. Hridayananda Maharaj was giving this example. You know, he's like good at creating imaginative examples. Supposing you're, you know, in the upper floors of a building and you jump out the window in the course of sailing down to hit the sidewalk. Think, oh, you know, I want to change my mind. I want to take it back. you pay the price. There's consequences for our free will choices. And you can say, oh, but you know, I have to struggle. For those that are in a very elevated condition, even with Bharat Maharaj, you know, he made another choice. And he paid the price for that choice, but then he didn't misuse his free will next time around. And Indradumna, to become the elephant. And what did he do wrong? He was in Samadhi and a sage came to his hermitage and he didn't acknowledge him because he was in Samadhi. What did he do wrong? He got cursed to become an elephant? Oh. But back to Godhead. So let's say the same thing in a different way. Supposing there is a intense loving relationship. Let's say the loving relationship of a mother for her child. You know, why should the mother have to endeavor so much for the child? But the mother isn't thinking, oh, there's so much endeavor. She's thinking, she's very happy making that endeavor for the child. That's her happiness. So the endeavor is an expression of happiness when, you know, we don't have an attitude. I want it easy. I want to be a mother and not have to take care of the child. I want to have a friend and not have to really worry about my friend or take care of things that they go through. I just want to have a friend. I want to be like easy. But when there's a loving relationship, it's, you know, to extend yourself to another person, it's not hardship. It's love. Even in Vrindavan, cowherd boys, they go to herd the cows, and here comes a demon. Oh, let's go play in the mouth of Bagasura. Krishna, you know. Or here comes Aristasura. Krishna. Why should they have a hardship? They're pure devotees. They just love Krishna. In such a situation, you know, look like hardship. It's just intensification of loving relationships. So the struggle is the weakness of our capacity to love, or our, you know, the natural capacity to love, to be in service to another. And, you know, joyful, not arduous, it's joyful. For us it's arduous. Have another idea of what happiness is. Take a vacation, that's happiness. Be calm. Take a break from devotional service. It's happiness, not happiness. Devotional service is happiness. There's some endeavor. That's happiness. It's love.
Yeah. So Guruji, I really like the statement that you just made. Our struggle is our weakness, the weakness of the capacity to love. So in really intense struggling situations, so how do we manifest the capacity towards Krishna?
You choose it and you keep exercising that choice.
Choice of accepting the struggle?
It's Krishna's making some arrangement. You can say that. Krishna's making some arrangement for you to serve Him. And you smile and say thank you. Yes. And it stays or changes or whatever. It's different, becomes more severe, becomes whatever it is. It's like varieties of service. The essence is that service. It's the relationship of loving service. And it can be however Krishna wants. So stay with the yes. Know, to say yes to Krishna slowly. But we have so many, no, not that. So continue to say yes, consistently. That's so, in the beginning it's an effort. And when it's love, it's no effort, spontaneous. Yes? Project your voice. I know you have a strong one. Use it.
Is keeping good relations and chanting at least 16 rounds still safe distance for us from the source, from the fire, to keep burning?
That's essential. That's like, you know, essential. It's preliminary, essential. There's other things, like, you know, don't hit him because he's small. You know, he wanted to put your shoes on, he's standing in the way, so you don't hit him. Yeah, there's other things that we do, but, you know, those are essential, because we don't offend the Vaishnavas. Any others? You know, there's... Take Krishna Prasadam. So forth. there's refinements of sadhacharya, Vaishnava behavior, and we pursue those because the two that you mentioned are good igniters of the desire to serve Krishna. So when the desire to serve Krishna favorably awakens, then there's refinements. So many. But you know, you have to be plugged in. So. Okay, thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada.